Blog Talk Radio.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, the song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you that I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. You'll miss her most when you roam, 'cause you'll think of her and think of home, the good old Brooklyn. Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, song that she sings for the town.
Welcome, everyone, to Howe's New York. I'm your host again, Robert Howe, and we're talking about a multitude of topics, including real estate, community, politics, and any hot topics of the day. We are broadcasting from an undisclosed location in Brooklyn, New York, to a potential audience stretching from Longyearbyen, Norway, to Tierra del Fuego, thanks to the power of Blog Talk Radio. I'm here with my executive producer, Jason Versace of Rising Tide Marketing. Tonight we're going to be talking about small business and regulations that have recently come into effect, bills that have been passed or proposed that affect small businesses and how and why they do, and is it good for small business? Is it good for the economy? Is it good for the workforce? So Jason and I have been poring over the topics of the day, and sadly, there are a lot of rules, regulations, and legislation pending that will affect small business, and we'll let you, the listener, decide whether it's good or bad for small business. Jason, what did you come up with in our research?
Well, I think what we'll do is we'll kick it off with a little-known issue that some people may not be aware of called Obamacare, otherwise known as the Affordable Care Act. And obviously this has been some time coming, and it's been in the works for years, and you know, you have your detractors of it, and then you have your proponents of it, and it just seems to become a magnet for all types of controversy, not the least of which is probably owed some large amount to the fact that President Obama has repeatedly changed the law midstream, if you will. I think it's up to 28 times, but I think the latest findings that came out from the CBO was that this was going to cost roughly 2 million jobs, over 2 million jobs over the next couple of years, by 2016. It's been disputed by the proponents of Obamacare. It's been pumped up by the detractors of Obamacare. And I think, you know, somewhere in the middle lies the truth. Locally, have you heard anything from the merchants in this neck of the woods as to how they're going to be impacted?
Well, I think we have to start off with proposal that's about 2,000 pages of rules and regulations regarding Obamacare, which, frankly, I don't think anybody knows. Definitely most members of Congress have never read. Which were imposed within a very short period of time. The execution, as we found out, is horrible. And as you're pointing out, the rules keep changing. So how do you plan when they keep changing the rules, or when you try to execute, you can't, or you find out that before you even try to execute, your own health insurance rates have gone up? And I thought the public was kind of looking forward to a reduction in rates as a result of Obamacare. But I think the small business community is wary. They're going to come up, they're going to realize that somewhere along the line their expenses are going to go up, their paperwork filings are going to go up, and they're going to have to pass it along. Either they do with lower profits or no profits, or they pass it along to their employees, or the consumer. So it is a costly proposition. Why they had to ram down the largest reform in healthcare history in one piece of legislation when they could have tried out some of this in piecemeal. Jason, what do you think about some of the are there any good aspects of this Obamacare?
Well, I think that everyone is in agreement that if we're in a forward-thinking, forward-moving society, a civilization that, for all intents and purposes, is the center of the universe, much to the chagrin of the administration, might not want anyone to know that, but I think that that's pretty much the facts, is that everyone wants everyone to be taken care of. We want to make sure that everyone is okay and that we're all in this together, especially in a country that is kind of founded on a philosophy of kind of hard work and stick-to-itiveness and perseverance, and that everyone kind of, you know, has joined together in this comrade in arms type mentality. I think we always tend to look after one another where we can, and I think that at the heart of it, that's the thing that I think everyone kind of agrees on, is that it's a noble philosophy, and that everyone, you know, wants their neighbor to be okay. But like you said, the execution of it has been poor, to say the least. I think that when you have leaders like Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who, like you admitted, that most people in Congress didn't read it, according to her, she said that we had to pass it before we found out what was in it. And I think that what's fascinating is the terminology that has taken on a cottage industry of its own from this law. The shift in focus from let's insure the uninsured to now we're trying to free the people who are stuck in job lock, and we're liberating them from these jobs so that they're free to pursue what they want to pursue and not be tied down to a job just for their health insurance. And I think that in a lot of ways, the changing argument for the benefits of it is, I think, hurting its initial reason for inception. I think that you tend to see the chinks in the armor and the cracks in the dam when you're constantly shifting your messaging. And when now the messaging is that it's not that we need to create more jobs. It's the jobs are bad, and the jobs are what's keeping people down and keeping people back. And you know, now they're free to go about and do whatever they want as long as they can get health care, which is subsidized by their neighbor.
Well, at least we've gotten off the topic of those death panels or death committees, where the early knock on the Obamacare was that you know, there would be a committee of people who would be deciding whether or not you get a certain care, and if you don't, then you were being sentenced to you know, to death. So at least the argument has moved from there. But you know, the argument still seems to be on the side of small businesses are going to face you know, disruptive rate hikes, that less people are going to get jobs now or seek jobs, as you point out. You know, that they won't be locked to a job just for health care. But you know, both sides have spun that their own way. In any event, I think both sides agree that there will be a shrinkage in the workforce. Time will tell if it's good or bad. And I just think small business is saying, yet again, we're going to have to absorb another sort of tax or regulation or paper-keeping requirement, and it's just not going to be good for them. And I think already small businesses are saying their rates have already gone up, and they don't see any immediate benefits. And unfortunately, small businesses once again being squeezed. But I think we pretty much killed Obamacare, the topic at least. We haven't killed it. But what else is going on? What else is the government doing good for small business?
Well, one last thing before we get off on the Obamacare, just some instances where you just mentioned small businesses where they're actually feeling the crunch already. And I think this is starting to crop up in a number of locations all over the country. We're seeing reports last week of a trendy California restaurant called Republic, which was adding a 3% surcharge that they specifically called out was to go for their Affordable Care Act payments so that their employees could keep their health care. And then just recently, this week, we hear of a chain restaurant in Florida called Gators that's now charging a 1% surcharge to pay for Obamacare, where you actually see a line item on your bill. And I think that might be the wave of the future, at least the immediate future, with Obamacare in terms of food service businesses, restaurants, quick serve restaurants, where they can actually find a figure and know in advance, this is what Obamacare is going to cost us, and we're going to have to make that up somehow. And they're making that up by, at least in the short term, the initial term, by passing that on to you and I when we're eating at their restaurants. I don't know if that's going to be a punishable offense from Eric Holder at some point, but it certainly seems like that is now permeating into the language of small businesses. It's something they're actually pointing out to in a nonpartisan way. They're just showing that, hey, this is it's not personal, it's business. And we're if we want to stay in business, we're going to have to figure out a way to come up with this recently unforeseen expense. And another way that's kind of seeping into the everyman's pocket is in the shared responsibility payment that the IRS is now putting language in saying that if you don't have Obamacare by the deadline, when you do your taxes next year, you're going to see an item called the shared responsibility payment, which is essentially the tax that you're going to have to pay for not having health care coverage. And on that note, if you want to shift gears, I think we're ready
well,
to...
I was going to shift until you told me about that line item stuff, but why do you think that line item, the Obamacare surcharge, will never appear on your cell phone or your cable bill? I'll give you the answer. There's no more room.
Well, if they did start putting it on their on the cable and the phone bill, then the EPA would be up in arms and the environmentalists, because that bill is already so long and so many pages, and there are already so many hidden taxes.
Yes. No paper reduction going on my cell phone or cable bill. All right. What else do we have?
Well, that kind of leads us into another hot button topic, and you'll see the undercurrent of all these issues that they all relate very, very heavily to small business, and that's now we're on to another combustible topic, the one of minimum wage and the minimum wage increase that the president mentioned so vividly in the State of the Union address. And there was an interesting thing I saw on Time. If you have a chance, go to Time's website, time.com. They've got a great animated video history of minimum wage, which is, believe it or not, 75 years old. And one of the findings was that your money today does not go as far as it did in 1968, 1969, when the minimum wage dollar amount that was being paid at that point was equal to about $10.50 today in 2014 money. So if you were going to go out and spend your hard-earned money for minimum wage, you were able to buy more in 1968, 1969 than you are today. So that's I found to be very interesting on the topic of minimum wage.
The other thing I found interesting was, I think, a quote by Vice President Biden, who said, raising the minimum wage is a wonderful way to help lower-income people. This way, we don't have to raise taxes on people. And I almost fell over that he even said that, but, of course, he's been known for saying a lot of, unusual comments. But I guess, And this will be the flavor of the rest of our program. The government is now saying to small business, you're right, we're not going to tax anymore. You give the people more money. You lay out more for benefits. And that's just not happening on a small business level. People who hire 5 to 50 people and, small business is really nothing more than making yourself a job. My father always said when he was a small business person, all I've really done is create two jobs for myself. And he worked the hours of, probably about 16 hours a day. So he did create two jobs for himself. And what we're even finding now is that many of the small business owners, at least in the Bay Ridge area, are getting along by having full-time jobs elsewhere. So they still are able to live the American dream of having a small business, but they're not in the dream anymore. They are on the outside looking in. They have other jobs, full-time jobs, usually in Manhattan, and then come to their business in the evening after work to close up and finish up. And I don't know if that was the idea of the American idea of owning a small business and being productive is to have to get a job on the side to support your business. But minimum wage is interesting because, there is a very strong chance going to shrink the employment base. I mean, if an employer has to pay, increase their salary, might they not, one, either shrink the number of employees they have or pass the increased charges onto their customers. Any way else, I don't think small business is making any, has any benefit from this increase in minimum wage. Rather than increase minimum wage, shouldn't the government be trying to enhance the environment for the creation of new jobs? And when I say new jobs, I don't mean more government jobs, more bureaucracy. I mean jobs that are produced by small businesses when they have the incentive to produce more jobs. They see the business and climate is improved, and they're able, you know, to hire more employees because the business climate is improved and they're getting busier and they need more staff. And I guess if there's not enough employees, they'll have to attract them by raising the wage to attract people. And I think that's the true way of getting the minimum wage to go up, is improving the business economy, not employers. They have to pay more money to their employees. What do you think, Jason?
It does seem like that this approach is counterintuitive. And when you start to look at how do we help grow the economy in the country, well, the small businesses in the country make up such a substantial amount of the workforce in the country. And like you said, they create jobs. It creates jobs for the small business owner who, if they're successful, they'll create jobs for other people that they'll hire. And it just seems that you almost think that, you know, there's some type of, you hear all the time, there's the war on this, there's the war on that, the war on obesity, the war on poverty. But it almost seems like they're fighting, we're creating a war on small business. There are so many obstacles, and this is just another instance where small business is going to have to say, okay, here's another instance where we're going to have to pick up the slack, and we're going to have to figure out a way to add another increased cost when everything else is going up around them. The cost of materials, the taxes are going up, depending where you are in the country. Some areas are much more friendly to small businesses than others, and it just seems to be that there's just a lack of fundamental understanding on the economic level from our leadership. And I would say, if you haven't read I, Pencil, by an economist named Leonard Reed from 1958, it basically is all you ever need to know about economics. It's a story of a pencil as it relates its family tree. And when you think about it, how simple a device a pencil is, but just how amazingly complex it is to create, and that the amount of people that are involved in creating a pencil and the amount of jobs and the amount of money that is created from this one simple invention, it really does show you that the people who are running the show really don't comprehend economics all that well. And that has trickled down to things like the minimum wage increase and the Obamacare, Affordable Care Act, as ways that are really, really going to put a lot of small businesses out of business.
Well, you know, and don't you think that they might, the small business will now have an incentive to use less labor, to look for other ways to replace labor, maybe mechanization, and or maybe look outside of our country, you know, to reduce their labor costs. Of course, unfortunately, the small business person can't won't be able to do business in Southeast Asia, but the larger corporations already have. I mean, isn't that example enough for all of us? The small businesses are trapped here within the confines of the continental United States, and, you know, they're pretty much stuck. But they will find a way to reduce their workforce and rely less on their employees, and
probably cut back hours, probably cut back services where they can to save an extra buck or two.
But in the words of our vice president, at least we didn't raise the taxes. What else do we have on?
Well, you kind of feel like that maybe whoever's writing the speeches has already determined that Biden is the Lou Costello to
Obama's Bud Abbott and giving him all of the punchlines.
Is it possible his speechwriter also works for Saturday Night Live or
maybe.
Some...
Maybe he doesn't have a speechwriter. Maybe he really is just winging it. Well, the next thing, and it just seems like we're really killing the small businesses today, but recently in New York, Mayor de Blasio passed a bill for the paid sick leave, and that has also been a lightning rod topic of late, and how that is affecting small businesses as well. And I think that a telling comment or a telling piece to this puzzle was recently when we had the big snowstorm and they were determining whether to shut down schools or not. And the mayor got caught in a little bit of a lie when he said his reason was for not closing the schools, which he got into a little bit of a tiff with Al Roker on, was that the weather reports didn't seem to be too accurate, only to find out later on that he really kept the schools open because he thought they could serve as a de facto daycare center for, you know, those people who are working those two or three jobs and you know, might not be able to afford to stay home or afford to get a babysitter. So I think this paid sick leave is kind of all tying in together to that to show us, and it's just another stress on the small business community.
Well, the thing that sort of, you know, gets my interest is that I'd like to know how many people in the city council who voted for this bill, including Mayor de Blasio, who supported it or introduced it, actually ever ran a small business, and how easy it is for a legislator who has been a professional public servant all their life to look to somebody else to fork over the money. Now, it would be different if you told me that I think there are 35 city councilmen. If you told me all of them had been small business people and they understood, that I could respect. But my guess is that many of these councilmen have never been in the private sector, never was concerned with making a payroll and paying taxes and all the paperwork that goes into it. And yet they go ahead and pass a law that they have no real understanding of the effect it'll have on small business. So, you know, my main beef is, you know, passed by people who have no small business experience.
That's an excellent point, and I think, I mean, it does really lend itself to the view from 30,000 feet. It seems like that is almost the philosophy from the top down, is that these are not people who are making our economic policy, who really know what it is to create a job or create revenue or to run a business or to kind of build anything. And I think that, you know, we could cut and paste a lot of the same downsides for the paid sick leave that we did for minimum wage. It could result in small businesses not hiring, laying off staff, maybe even telling people you have to scale back. I mean, it really is almost like a double-edged sword, because they might have to scale back people's hours, and then also in order to maybe get in underneath that Obamacare tax as well. To if you have a certain amount of full-time employees, you're going to have to pay that. Businesses are going to have to pay that tax, that fee, if they didn't have health care for their employees. And now you might find that the same thing, that businesses might scale back their hours to kind of find a way to save money in yet another expense that they're bearing on the backs of their small business.
And you know, I do want to correct myself. I said 35 members. There are 51 members. I don't know how 35 got into my head, but it did, and it came out of my mouth. But you know, besides having to pay for a sick leave, no one except a small business person or their bookkeeping department understands the additional paperwork that this is required to generate. Now, I know a while back there was a tax that the state passed that my accountant said to me, well, you know, they didn't even hook it onto another tax form. They made a special tax form payable on a different date than all the other taxes, which meant my accountant had to come in for both me and all of his clients, prepare a single tax return for this one particular tax and file it at a different time than all my other taxes. And of course, not only did I have to pay the tax, but I had to pay my accountant. But these pieces of legislation that go into effect have an incredible amount of paperwork attached to it. And worse, if you don't do the paperwork correctly, guess what? You get fined. So honestly, there are times I'm happy enough just to pay the fee, but just don't make me do the paperwork that accompanies it.
I think that Dennis Miller recently joked about that by imploring the government to just give him a number, just give us a figure. What do you want us to pay? so we can be done with it, rather than risk, like you said, if you mess up or you're not aware of some little code or footnote somewhere in the document in page 1943 that's going to cost you extra money or extra aggravation. And you know, one of the things I wanted to mention to you that I thought about with regards to the paid sick leave issue is, could this also be opening up a Pandora's box? Could we be seeing this explosion of frivolous lawsuits? What if, who's to say, like, that if I'm an employee and there's a discrepancy or an argument with a paid sick day or whatever, that it couldn't blow up into a legal case or a lawsuit? Do you think that could be also a byproduct?
Well, I guess just like there are a slew of lawsuits, whether or not did I get paid for overtime, and did I receive the correct cut of tips if I were in a tip, you know, type of business. I guess an employee, if they get terminated for some reason, could say, oh, by the way, my boss never gave me sick leave. They made me work on a day when you know, I wasn't well, and forced me to come into work. So, yeah, there's also yet another opportunity for an employer to have to defend themselves against, you know, potentially frivolous, you know, actions.
Well, I think in all this time, we were going to try and get to another topic, but I wonder if we save that for another show, because we're already running a little long discussing all of the many pitfalls, and did we discuss any of the merits of any of these?
Well, I think we tried to present this fairly, you know, but when the Congressional Budget Office tells you that Obamacare is going to cost money and lose jobs, I mean, if we're not listening to the Congressional Budget Office, I don't know who we're listening to. And Obamacare is similar to minimum wage and paid sick leave, and I'm sure if the CBO were to analyze those pieces of legislation, they would come to the same conclusion. So, Jason, we did try to present a fair, you know, overview of new regulations that will be impacting small business, but I don't remember hearing any silver linings for that. But, you know, true to our, you know, philosophy here on Blog Talk Radio, How's New York, we're going to try to keep it balanced, but and let you, the listener, decide. But I didn't hear anything all that great. And as you point out, we're at the end of our show now. And we did talk about a lot of things involving small business, and it's a great American tradition to be in small business, but it's difficult. I credit everybody who's in small business for themselves. You are living the American dream, but it is a tough dream, and you're not getting enough sleep at night in order to have more nice dreams like that. So we'll conclude on that topic. You know, we're happy to have, you know, thrown out a lot of these topics for your consideration. We're concluding tonight's radio program, and we thank Blog Talk Radio for hosting our show. And Jason and I had fun talking about new legislation that's impacting small business. This is How's New York signing off. God bless Brooklyn and all of its people. Wishing you a good night and a good morning and a good afternoon. I am your host, Robert Howe.
Heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge.